welcome to Burning Question. Michael McKenzie here. And if taking care of your body is important to you, you probably will have read or heard about a plethora of health fads. So what to believe and what to treat with the suspicion it deserves? We're going to quiz science and health reporter and CoronaCast star Tegan Taylor. Tegan, welcome back.
Hi, Michael.
Good to have you with
us. Intermittent fasting.
Okay, here we go. Intermittent fasting, yes. Is there evidence for these diets being of long-term benefit?
You might be surprised to hear, yes. So the most famous of the intermittent fasting diets that people probably have heard of is the 5-2 diet, where you eat normally 5 days a week and you eat a very restricted diet on the other 2 days. But some people do alternate day fasting or even the warrior diet, where you only eat in a 4-hour window of the day. And it seems to be that they do have quite significant health benefits for longevity and extending your lifespan and in reducing inflammation. But most of those studies have been done in mice or in short-term human studies. So definitely one to keep watching out for, but you should be talking to your doctor before you start a new diet, especially if you have something like type 2 diabetes, because that can interfere with it.
Well, last time I spoke to Michael Mosley, Dr. Michael Mosley, who of course is one of the great advocates of this whole form of eating, he was very anxious to point out that there is a longitudinal study of human beings involving about 3,000 people currently going on in Europe, and they hope to have some results soon. So watch this space. Now, what makes something a superfood? Because, you know, it seems to be attached to food labelling all over the joint these days.
Right. So you sort of maybe think of a superfood as having an unusually high number of antioxidants or some other kind of like supercharged health thing, but there's actually no official definition of the word superfood. It's actually a marketing term, but it's worth mentioning that just because something doesn't have an official definition doesn't make it meaningless, because otherwise it wouldn't be a selling point. So there's usually some sort of aura around a superfood that they usually do have a high level of antioxidants, although not generally higher than other fruit and veg that you can just buy in the supermarket for normal prices. And there's usually an exotic backstory that goes along with them. So maybe they're part of a traditional diet or something like that.
I'm just pointing out here that you can now buy frozen blueberries for just $4 a packet. Is that okay?
That's great. Yum. Smoothie time for sure.
All right, let's talk about soft drink. Now, there, of course, are the high-sugar soft drinks still on the market. There's artificially sweetened. There's soft drinks that are sweetened with naturally occurring sweeteners like stevia but have no calories. And then there's just water. What is my best choice of beverage amongst all those, Tegan?
I think you already know that the best choice of beverage among those is water. But I think that I think people are also pretty aware of the fact that high sugar drinks are not good for you. But there is some sort of question mark still around sweetened drinks, things that are sweetened with things that aren't sugar. And like you say, some of them do come from natural sources, but there's no evidence to show that those are better for you than aspartame and other artificial sweeteners that have been around for a long time. At huge doses, they could be harmful, but at the doses that we would encounter them in a normal soft drink drinking lifestyle, there's no evidence that they have any harm for humans.
Well, my next question kind of relates back to this one about soft drinks as well, because I'll talk about what I've discovered. And that is, I'm asking you now, what is best for a healthy gut? Is it fiber? Is it fermented foods, or should I just take supplements?
Right. So were you going to talk about kombucha, because it's a fizzy drink?
I was.
Yes, yes. So fermented foods like kombucha, but also things like sauerkraut, like they're parts of pretty much every traditional diet around the world. They're naturally high in beneficial organisms that, yes, do help with your gut bacteria and all the other lovely things that live in your gut, which we know have a really strong relationship with our overall health. And fiber is also really important. So you might have heard of prebiotics. So probiotics are sort of the things that you take to populate your gut with this bacteria, and prebiotics are sort of things that prime your gut to be a healthy place for these guys to hang out. And so that's fiber-rich food. So yes, fiber-rich foods like veggies and pulses are great. Fermented foods are also good. But commercial probiotics, there doesn't seem to be as much benefit in those. And that's The ones that you just buy over the counter at the chemist, they're usually just a single strain of bacteria. So it's not giving you the same diversity as you would get from having a well-rounded diet, although sometimes they will be prescribed on purpose to people with particular conditions.
So back to kombucha as a case in point here, it kind of answers the soft drink thing for me too, because as someone who does like something fizzy in the mouth, if it's fermented fizzy, what's not to love? There's often very low sugar in those drinks, and yes, you are paying for them commercially, but they must be doing something that's okay to you rather than, you know, chowing down on some cola or other soft drink.
Oh, absolutely. Like, compared to commercial soft drinks, I don't think that's a really good comparison. Some of the commercial kombuchas do have a lot of sugar in them. But, yeah, that's actually something I'd like to do a deeper dive on, because I'm not sure what the difference is between homemade and commercial kombucha for your gut health.
Sure. I just checked the label and there's no sugar on mine, because I'm living my best life here, Tegan. Just wanted to point
that
out.
Your best sugar-free life. I believe it.
Hey, this one's really important, though. Let's get right to the heart of the matter. Can holding in a fart be bad for your health?
I'm so glad you asked, because I was baffled that this is even something that researchers have looked at. But they have, and it turns out that it could be... it could have some harm associated with it, at least in the short term. It's not clear whether that rise in pressure in your gut can lead to sort of severe long-term effects. But according to the experts who've looked at this, it's better to let it out. Better out than in, as the old adage goes.
Okay. And when it comes to gut health and heart health in this case, what's the best foods? Legumes, mushrooms, coffee, dairy? Where do we go?
Yeah, so I've got some good news for coffee lovers. Coffee does seem to have antioxidants that are linked to good heart health, and somehow habitual coffee drinking is associated with a lower risk of death from cardiovascular disease, which is, you know, sometimes some of these links are a little long, but there does seem to be a link between coffee and reduced risk of death from cardiovascular disease. The same doesn't hold true for energy drinks. There seems to be something to do with coffee, and I think tea as well, and that kind of... as a plant. I don't think it's a surprise to anyone. Legumes, definitely, they're associated with a reduced risk of death from pretty much every cause. And then mushrooms are also a really good alternative to red meat. Dairy is good. It has lots of good nutrients in it, but its actual link to heart disease risk seems to be a bit neither one nor the other. I think if you like eating dairy, it's not necessarily a risk, but it doesn't seem to provide a heart health benefit.
And just harking back to legumes and our previous discussion on holding in your farts, I think you can see the relationship there. So we'll move on from that. Let's talk about earwax. These are all listeners' questions, by the way, so we're not just making these up. Earwax, does it need to be removed?
I love that our listeners are asking these really important questions, because this is the sort of stuff you do every day. You're in the bathroom, you're cleaning your ears out or not. Actually, our ears are amazing, and I could talk at length about this. Your ear canal has like this conveyor belt motion where the cells shuffle their way to the outside of your ear, and that's a way of ferrying out the dust and dead skin cells and the other things that can kind of happen in your ear. And so if you're pushing the cotton tip in, you can actually disrupt this natural conveyor belt motion. And so actually it can be bad for your ears to clean them out. You actually can cause it to become more blocked. But sometimes earwax does need to be removed. It can interfere with the doctor being able to see what's happening in your ear. In some cases, it can interfere with your hearing. But if that's the case, put the cotton tip down, go and see your doctor and let a professional take care of it, because they've got special instruments. They actually flush the ear out in some cases, and that's a much safer way of doing it than sticking something in. The doctor that I spoke to for this said what my dad used to say, never stick anything smaller than your elbow in your ear. And all our listeners at home are trying to get their elbow to their ear right now.
Oh, Tegan, that's sad news. Because there's something really pleasurable. I know this is going to put some people off, but there is something pleasurable about sort of cleaning out your ears. I do remember when I was a kid having quite a lot of earwax, and often, younger children do have a excess load, and getting my ears flushed and then running down the street and for the first time in about a year feeling the wind rush in and out of my ear holes. It was amazing.
Oh.
Good times.
What a deprivation.
I know. Very quickly, alkaline diets, good or bad for you?
Oh, so this is like a super fad diet. The actual kind of science behind alkaline diets is there's not evidence to back it up. But if you're following an alkaline diet, you're probably eating a healthy diet. So it's sort of like they're kind of good for you by accident. The alkaline diet claims that it protects the calcium in your body, in your bones, by reducing your cancer risk. There's not a lot of evidence behind that. But an alkaline diet is vegetables and fruit. It really prioritizes that. And there's plenty of high quality evidence to show that that's great for your health. Some notes of warning though, the supplements and specialty waters, there's not evidence for that. And sometimes alkaline diets recommend steering clear of whole groups of foods that can be healthy, like whole grains. And this flies in the face of the Australian dietary guidelines, which recommend that adults eat about 6 serves of whole grain or high fiber grain foods every day.
Tegan Taylor, you have answered the questions correctly. You may now leave the classroom. You have an early mark. Thank you so much for taking the time.
I've graduated. Thanks, Michael.
Tegan Taylor, health and science reporter, with some of your burning questions.